Learning Nefesh HaChaim, Shah Gimel, Chapter 12. We're going to try just translating straight into the English without reading the Hebrew. We were speaking about before how the name Havai, the name Yudke Vovke, is really the source of all the names. Because as we said, that in terms of the two aspects, from Hashem's aspect, there's only Hashem, and there's nothing else, and He fills the entire universe. From our aspect, there are many, many forces, and the name Elohim is the master of all forces. He is the Lord of all forces. All forces are attributed to Him. What we have to try now and do is to put the two together, and we have to say that Hashem, Hu HaElokim. Right? Like we declare on Yom Kippur, Hashem, we say it seven times, Hashem, Hu HaElokim, Hashem. This absolute name, Yud Kei Vav Kei, which is everything that He was, is, and will be, the ultimate name of Hashem, is Elohim. He is the master of all forces. There's nothing else besides Him. That's at the very highest level. At lower levels, as we see what we see. We see the different forces, but we have to at least intellectually try and grasp the idea that there is nothing else beside Him. We're going to start here, chapter 12, and with the following idea. There's a Gemara in Chulin that says as follows, Ki Hashem hu Elohim, Hashem is God, and there is none besides Him. That's a verse that we say every day in Aleinu Shabbat. Hashem is God, and there's none besides Him. Now the Gemara comments on that, there's a drosha on that pasuk, and the Gemara says that even, there's nothing besides Him, even witchcraft. Even witchcraft is not besides Him. There's no other force, and even witchcraft is not another force. Because the whole idea of the workings of witchcraft, they come from the forces of impurity, of contamination. Kodesh Baruch Hu has released forces of impurity into the world, and that's part of the fact that this is a world where we have to make choices between good and evil. We ourselves have to navigate our life by choosing good over evil and being challenged all the time, being tempted all the time with all sorts of temptations to do the wrong thing. So therefore, there are these forces of evil that, so to speak, tempt us and pull us away. They're trying to pull us away, and they're actual forces. And in fact, we know that there are two sets of forces in the world. There's the forces of holiness and the forces of contamination, and they're 100% parallel to each other. Whatever the one has got, the other has got. So therefore, we know that the idea of witchcraft comes from these forces of contamination, of impurity, from the impure chariot. We speak about the divine chariot. So when we speak about the divine chariot, we mean the chariot of holiness. But there's another chariot, which is called the chariot of impurity. And there are just two chariots. The chariot actually symbolizes the whole government of Hashem's government, the way Hashem governs the world. Just like you have in a government, you would have different ministers, and the ministers would have different departments, and each department would have its own staff, and each department would take care of a different area of the government, of the governing of the country, the governing of that district. So too, the chariot represents the government of the heavens, how the heavens govern this world, how all the different departments of the upper world, all part of this government. So the truth is, so that's what we call the chariots. So now we're saying there are two chariots. There's a pure chariot and there's an impure chariot. So the impure chariot, that's called the Mekova Tumea. Mekova Tuma. That's the chariot of impurity. That also is another whole set of government. And this also has a certain influence on the world, because as we said, we have free choice. And the wisdom of witchcraft is a wisdom whereby somehow they can access these forces and do certain things. Now, concerning the wisdom of witchcraft, we mentioned in the last year also, the Sanhedrin, which is the top elders of Israel, the top scholars of Israel, had to be experts in it. They needed to be experts because sometimes they would have to judge cases where witchcraft was involved, especially if you have the case of a Novi Sheker, false prophet. A false prophet comes into town, he starts saying prophecies, people start following him, he's very, very impressive. He says things to people and he can see into the future, and everyone's amazed by this guy, and he starts telling them to follow him. He becomes a new like leader, religious leader. So the rabbis have to know that he's doing witchcraft if that's what he's doing, in order to stop him. They can say, no, this guy's just doing tricks, that's his trick, that's how it works, and he's not a genuine person. So they had to know the laws of witchcraft. Sometimes you can put the man to death if he's trying to persuade people to go away from the Torah. So you can actually execute him. So this is the wisdom of witchcraft, which is the wisdom of knowing the names of the different forces of impurity. Now, this knowledge of witchcraft is a knowledge of the powers of this impure chariot and the names of the different departments, the names of the different forces that work in that setup. Right? The different departments is different parts of the chariot, and those have different forces, and they're able to do different things. So that through them, through the calling on these names, so those people who understand witchcraft will be able to do different types of miracles almost, will be able to do different types of wonders and strange things. You know, maybe they can do all sorts of things like make people fly. We know that when Bilam went to fight Moshe Rabbeinu, according to the Midrash, so he and the kings of Midian who were fighting with him against Moshe Rabbeinu, that he taught them how to fly. He showed them a way to fly, that they could attack them by flying at them. But then Moshe Rabbeinu showed them the name of Hashem, they all fell down, and they were all killed. So therefore, they can do unusual things like a human flying. That would be unusual, right? People don't normally fly. Right? Even Superman's not real. It's just a comic character. So therefore, but these forces of witchcraft could do things that are unusual, unnatural, supernatural, which is that they evoke an oath. They invoke an oath on these forces of Tumah. They call their names, and they force them to swear. They evoke an oath on them, thereby binding them to themselves, and they can actually influence them to do wonders. So they influence the life force to change nature, to do unnatural things, which is the opposite of the laws of nature. There's laws of nature. The laws of nature, according to laws of nature, people don't fly. Birds can fly, people can't fly. They're laws of nature. The sun rises in the morning, the sun sets at night, the moon shines at night, etc. Different rules of nature, laws of gravity, etc. But they can actually, these forces can defy nature. They can overrule nature. And he brings here from the Eitz Chaim, that he explains that because that's how Kodesh Baruch Hu created it, that there is an idea of these forces which are higher than the forces of nature. The reason they can affect the laws of nature is because they're higher than the force of nature, and therefore they can have an influence on the different constellations and on the different mazalas, all the different areas of influence. So therefore, and through that, they can force nature to do certain things against nature and to turn around nature. To turn around the influence of the stars, the different constellations, etc., the different mazalas that are fixed in the world, they can actually swivel them, because these forces of nature, these forces of impurity, are actually higher forces. They are higher forces than the laws of nature. As we know that every force of every world, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given it its strength, just like different angels have different strengths. Some angels are able to do some things, other angels can do other things. So therefore, every type of heavenly force has its own strength, has its own area of operation, and therefore that's what they control. Each one controls its area, its department of the world below it. So these forces can actually overrule that. And that the Gemara says that what does the word kishuf mean? So the Gemara says that the word kishuf is made of a mnemonic. It's an acronym. With kishuv, chaf shin yud pei is shemakishin pamal yeshomala, that they deny the upper heavenly bodies. They, so to speak, put the upper heavenly bodies out of sync. They can actually push off the upper heavenly bodies. So he says that it's only the upper heavenly bodies that are called the pamalia, those upper heavenly forces that control the natural world. That's what they can put out of sync. Right, the constellation, the different mazolas. So there, Kodesh Baruch Hu has given the forces of impurity the ability to rise higher than those natural forces, the natural forces of our world, the natural laws of nature, and they can turn them around. But Chas v'Shalom, these impure forces, they don't have a power to actually go higher than that, to go higher than the laws of nature, beyond the laws of nature, to higher heavenly bodies, holy heavenly bodies, that they can't affect. Now, there's the chariot of holiness. The impure forces can't have any effect of the chariot of holiness. They can only have they can have an effect on those forces which are the natural forces that run the world, that they can overrule, they can push aside, they can do wondrous things. But the higher holy chariot, that they can't have any influence, and on the contrary, that when someone is threatened by these impure forces, if he will then call on the forces of holiness, so then in a minute they will nullify the forces of impurity. Because the force of impurity also dependent on Hashem. So therefore, the minute you call on a higher authority, it's like a hierarchy. So the minute you call on a higher authority that's higher than the forces of impurity, so those forces of impurity just fade away. They can't do anything at all. So therefore, not only can't they affect it, but they themselves will be nullified by those higher forces of holiness. Right, and that would be the tzaddikim who are able to evoke, call on the names of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and to nullify these forces of impurity. And the whole reason is because since their force, the force of impurity, as we said before, they're not their own forces. They're not an independent force. They really only come from Hashem. So therefore, if you come to a higher level, the highest of levels, as we've been saying up to now, is that Hashem fills all of reality. So if Hashem fills all of reality, so then nothing else can exist. So therefore, that's why it just sort of removes the illusion. You know, sometimes a person, you know, like in the old projectors, you have a movie on a screen, and then somebody walks in front of the movie, so then you just see a shadow of the guy walking in front of the movie, and then you know, everyone starts shouting, we can't see the movie, right? Your shadow is blocking the whole movie. So therefore, the whole impression of all the different forces in this world are just lower forces. But the minute we go up to a higher source, so the higher source is able to nullify all other forces. So that's what we're saying here. Since everything is really filled with Hashem's presence, ultimately, if you can go to the higher source, then you can see that it's all Hashem. So then all those forces will just disappear in a minute. Now this is what the Shas brings. It brings a story as follows. There was a story of a certain woman. She was a witch. And she was trying to get Rabbi Chanina. She was trying to curse Rabbi Chanina. So one of the type of witchcraft she wanted dust from under his feet. So she was sort of following him around. And once she saw him standing in a certain place, then he moved from that place to another place. So she quickly gathered the dust from where he'd been standing before. And he saw her. And he said to her, help yourself, it won't help you at all. He realized that she wanted to do some sort of witchcraft by having the dust from under his feet. And he said, help yourself. Whatever you try to do won't help. Why? Because there's nothing else besides Hashem. That's what he said to him. All your witchcraft is nonsense. It won't help. It won't do anything against me. It won't hurt me in any way. Because there is none besides Hashem. Ein oid milvado. That's what he said. So the Gemara there asks the question, but surely we said that the powers of impurity are able to push away the natural forces of the world. So therefore, how could he say to your forces are nothing, your witchcraft is nothing? We know that the witchcraft has a power to sometimes change the laws of nature. How could he say that to her? That's what the Gemara asks in that story. So the Gemara answers, because Rabbi Chanina had much merit. The reason that he could tell her that her witchcraft won't help at all, because he had a lot of merit. So against his merit, she can't do anything. So the question on that, it seems to be, Rabbi Chanina obviously thinks a lot about himself. Because, you know, he feels that, you can't do anything to me because I have a lot of merit. If, according to what we just explained in the Gemara, it seems to be Rabbi Chanina was quite conceited. Mm-hmm. So the Gemara explains as follows. Certainly, Rabbi Chanina did not consider himself to be very special. We know that the great tzaddikim are very, very humble. And they don't regard themselves as being very, very holy people. And therefore, he wouldn't think that he's got so many good deeds and he's got so many merits that before him the witchcraft shouldn't have an effect on him. We know that this with witchcraft we can actually change the laws of nature. So certainly that's not the pshat, that he thought that he was higher than the laws of witchcraft, and he wasn't showing arrogance or conceit. But the idea is as follows, that since the powers of impurity are not independent powers. They're also powers that are really dependent on Hashem. So therefore, and HaKadosh Baruch has given them a certain realm of control. So therefore, if we can get higher than the realm of control of those powers, so then those powers will just disappear. They'll just disappear in a minute. And then they won't be able to do anything. They can't change anything. Even within their realm, from their realm and below, they can influence their world. They can actually make changes in the world. Like we mentioned before, doing supernatural things. But Rabbi Chanina, was not, he wasn't relying on his own merits. He was saying that he knows the secret of that there is nothing else besides Hashem. And with this faith was fixed in his heart, that he realized there is no force in the world. There's zero force in the world except the will of Hashem. Nothing exists besides the will of Hashem. It appears that there are all types of different forces in the world, but it's really all the will of Hashem. Once a person focuses on the fact that it's all the will of Hashem, once he can get onto that higher plane of focusing on that there's nothing besides Hashem in the world, and to focus on that, to have that in his mind, to cling in his mind to that idea, so then that itself, he's so to speak calling on the higher forces, which will nullify the forces of witchcraft, which are, because they're from a much, much higher place. And therefore, he was confident, since he knew the secret, and since he was clinging to the secret, so therefore he was confident that this woman couldn't hurt him in any way. And that's what he told her, help yourself to the dust, you can't hurt me at all. Why? Because ain't oid milvado, because I'm clinging to that level. I'm clinging to that level of that there's nothing besides himself. I'm focusing on that level that there's nothing besides Hashem. And that's what he was saying to her, and that's how he was able to knock her out. And here the Nefesh HaChaim tells us one of his great, great principles. This is very famous. The next piece we're going to see now. And it's been used in many, many places. I mean, many rabbis have spoken about it. But this is really, this idea we're going to see right now in the Nefesh HaChaim is as follows. That in truth, he says that this itself is an amazing charm. This idea of focusing on the fact that there's nothing besides Hashem is an amazing charm that can remove from a person and nullify any type of punishments, or any type of willpower that's against you, right? Let's say there's someone who's coming to hurt you. Right? Let's say there's a criminal, there's a highwayman who's coming to rob you, to kill you, to hurt you, to hit you. So really, that's another force. You know, there's his desire, right? There's a bad man out there who wants to come and hurt us. So this bad man is coming, and he's got his desire, he's got his plans, and he's thought he's planning to rob you, he's planning to steal, he's planning to murder. So therefore, his power also comes from Hashem. The fact that he wants to hurt us, the fact that this person wants to hurt us, he's also getting his power from Hashem. Where does his power come from? How come he can get up in the morning? How come he can walk around and move his arms and feet? Because Hashem gives him power. So therefore, if we can go higher, if we can call on Hashem, so to speak, if we can attach ourselves to the will of Hashem, so then whatever this person is planning to do to hurt us can't have any effect. Because surely Hashem is the master of all forces and there is nothing else beside him. And therefore, if we focus on this idea that there is nothing besides the unity of Hashem, so therefore that will nullify his force. Because we're now attaching ourselves to the highest force, that it's all Hashem. Once you say it's all Hashem, this person can only hurt me if Hashem wants him to hurt me. If Hashem wants him to hurt me, then that's the will of Hashem, then I don't mind. But if I tie myself to the will of Hashem, I subscribe to the will of Hashem, I believe in the will of Hashem, I believe in the force of Hashem, and therefore this person I say can't hurt me at all. And therefore he's able to nullify this person from his will, and he can actually cancel out this person's desire to hurt him. That automatically, once you reach that high, just we said, by reaching that higher plane, you can nullify any other negative forces, like the forces of witchcraft. So you could use it in a simpler sense. Let's say someone's coming to hurt us, to harm us, by focusing on Hashem, that itself is a protection. Now, this idea was taught, this was taught, there are a number of stories. One story goes as follows, I think it's somewhere in one of the Brisker Rabbonim, taught over this idea. It comes from Nefesh HaChaim. Nefesh HaChaim was the Rav Chaim Volozhin. He was the Rosh Yeshiva of Volozhin Yeshiva. And the great-grandfather, Brisker, Yosef Ver Soloveitchik, the original Brisker Rav of the Brisk dynasty, he also taught at Volozhin Yeshiva. He was one of the lecturers there for a period of time until I think there was that eventually he moved away from them and he became the Rav of Brisk. But basically, I think he was the one who actually taught this principle of Nefesh HaChaim over to other people. So the story goes as follows. I think the story was with him, that there was a merchant, that there once the tax collectors came to their town, and they were going from shop to shop looking if people have goods that were, they used to sometimes, you know, to try and make a living, people used to sneak goods over the border without paying custom taxes. They used to sneak it over, right, over the borders. You know, there were border controls at the main gate, but people used to go around the main gate, and then they used to sneak in goods that weren't allowed to be brought into the country. So these tax inspectors came to inspect the shops of this town, and they were going from store to store looking for smuggled goods. That's the word, smuggled goods. And they were getting closer and closer to this man's store, and his store was full of smuggled goods. The whole store was made up of stuff that he shouldn't have. And if they would have caught him, they'd throw him to jail for the rest of his life. He was much terrified, so he went running to the Rav. And he said, Rav, what can we do? They're coming to my store soon. They're going to see that all my goods in the store is smuggled, and they're going to chuck me into jail. What's going to be? So the Rav said to him, sit down and let's learn. So that's, he said, sit down and learn. Let's just focus on the Torah. Torah is the desire of the Shem, all Hashem. We will link ourselves. We will align ourselves with the Torah of Hashem. And therefore, we will rise to the high realm of the law of Hashem, or the will of Hashem. And these people can't hurt you. And that's what happened. They were going from store to store. And they came up to his store. They came up to his shop, the inspectors. And they said, right, let's take a lunch break. And they said, yeah, but how do we know where to go back to? So they made a big X on his shop door. Because they said, right, we'll next time when we come back off our lunch break, we'll start from that shop. After their lunch break, they came back. Meanwhile, the Rav and this shopkeeper had been learning the whole of the lunchtime period. When they came back, they saw the X on the shop door. They said, no, was that after we'd inspected? Is that the last store we inspected, or is it the store we still have to inspect? So they said, no, this must be the store that we inspect. We're going to start from the next store after it. And they just skipped out that whole store. That's one story. Then there was another story with the Briskerov, I think, in the Second World War, when they were trying to escape from a certain town, and there were Nazi patrols right going through the town. And he was, I think he was riding on a wagon with a goy. And, you know, it was obvious that he was Jew. And he was a Rav. So therefore, he was sitting on the wagon. He was worried that they would catch him. The patrols would see him sitting on this wagon. They would catch him. So he focused on this idea. In Oid Milvado. There is nothing besides Hashem. There is nothing besides Hashem. There is nothing besides Hashem. And he became like it was invisible. No one saw him. The Nazis walked right past him. They drove through the town. There were soldiers all over the place. They were looking up and down. And they just didn't see him. He sort of became invisible. He became like a mental block. No one saw him. And this was through focusing on this idea of Ein Oid Milvado, there is nothing besides Hashem. That is actually what protected him. So those are two famous stories. I don't know if I got all the details right, but they are documented stories. And this is the principle of Nefesh HaChaim. Once we link ourselves to the desire of Hashem, that we want to align ourselves with the desire of Hashem, we want to focus on the fact that there's nothing besides Hashem, that the true reality is that there's nothing besides Hashem, then we go to a higher plane than any harmful forces which are from a low plane, and they can't hurt us at all. They cease to exist in a sense. So he goes on to say here that this really is the intention of the Zohar. When the Zohar says that the fourth mitzvah, I'm not sure what this fourth mitzvah is that we have to know that Hashem is the Lord, master of all forces, right? Like we said in the pasuk before, Yadata Yom, you should know this day and you should return it to your heart that there ain't Oid Milvado, there's nothing besides Hashem. And that the name Elohim, which is the master of all forces, is included in the name Havayah, the name Yudke Vavke. That a person should know it's all one and there's nothing separate. There's nothing separate from Hashem. There are no parts. There are no different parts. At the highest realm, there are no parts at all. And even the Satan, at that point, even the Satan will remove itself from the world. We know one of our most desperate fights during our lifetime is to try to fight off the Yetzer Hara. The Yetzer Hara, he tries to tempt us to sin. But when we rise to this high realm, then even the Yetzer Hara ceases to exist. At the high realm, because it's only Hashem. The Yetzer Hara itself, he himself is only an angel of Hashem. He's doing the will of Hashem. But once we align ourselves with Hashem, we have Hashem's helping us. And therefore the Satan ceases to bother us. He also ignores us. Just like those Nazis and those tax inspectors ignored those Yidden who were in trouble. So too the Satan can also, if we'll tie ourselves to the highest realm that there is nothing besides Hashem, the Satan will also just pass us by and he'll also be removed from our reality. And also the whole concept of, we know the concept of a tzaddik decrees and Hashem fulfills. That's a concept we've heard before. Yet sometimes tzaddikim themselves can do wondrous things, supernatural things. So the idea here is as follows, that when they link the pureness of their faith on their heart to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to the highest realm, and therefore they say by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's realm, all is equal. All is equal. Hashem rules everything absolutely equally. So therefore, all the nature ceases to exist. All the laws of nature cease to exist. So the classic example of this is the story of Reb Chanina ben Doisa. On a Friday afternoon, his daughter told him, "Oy, oy, oy, instead of putting oil in the lamp, I went and put vinegar in the lamp." They probably had similar bottles. So she went and put vinegar in the lamp instead of oil. And she says, now our lamps aren't going to burn for Shabbos. So he told her, just like Hashem makes oil burn, the fact that oil burns and it produces a light is a miracle. Mm-hmm. So the same, just like Hashem can make oil burn, and that itself is a miracle, so too he can make vinegar burn. Now, all the rules of nature don't apply once you link to that higher realm. And that's what he was saying to her. Once we nick the Ein Oid Milvada, there's nothing besides Hashem. So the fact that oil can burn, you can have a cup of oil, you can have a wick, and you can light the wick, and the wick will burn for a couple of hours because the wick is drawing from the oil and it's creating a lamp. So that itself is a miracle. That's the desire of Hashem. So everything, whatever Hashem desires, can be. So therefore, even though it's vinegar, as far as we know, vinegar is not flammable. But Hashem, just like Hashem could say that oil should burn, he can say vinegar should burn. And that's at this higher realm. At this higher realm, there's only the Hashem's force. Right? A tzaddik wants candles for Shabbos. He wants to have lights in his house for Shabbos. He doesn't want to sit and eat in the dark. So therefore, since he does the will of Hashem, Hashem wants to do his will. And that's what happened with Chanina ben Doisa. So not only did the vinegar burn, it burnt the entire Shabbos. The whole Shabbos, they had light from this vinegar lamp. So that's the idea of... So in that higher realm is only the desire of Hashem. Therefore, if Hashem wants the tzaddik should have what he should have, Hashem wants a person to have a house, Hashem wants a person to have a comfortable bed to sleep in, of course, Hashem wants us to have food to eat. So it doesn't matter if we go to the store to buy food or we don't go to the store to buy food, we're supposed to get a meal. The meal will come. We're supposed to eat. We'll eat. We're supposed to have a place to sleep, so we'll have a place to sleep. So that's it. Once one ties himself to the will of Hashem, then whatever's supposed to be will be anyway, whether you make the effort or not. Whether you go to the store or not, you'll still have the food to eat. How will it come? I don't know how it'll come. It'll come in some weird way, some weird, wonderful way. If a person is exciting, then things happen for him without him doing it himself. And that's because he's linking himself to this highest realm. Let's look at chapter 13. And this is the idea behind the service of the patriarchs, right? Avraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov, all their life. Because they, in the awesomeness of their righteousness, the whole righteousness was the whole purity and holiness of their hearts would cling. They'd cling to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Their thoughts would cling to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to the desire of Hashem, without interrupting. In other words, they would be focused on Hashem all their lives. That's what they would do. They would be focusing on the desire of Hashem, to fulfill the desire of Hashem all their lives. And therefore, they would nullify their will to Hashem's will. Like it says in Pirkei Avos, you should strive to, it says it like this, nullify your will to Hashem's will, and then he will nullify his will to your will. And so if we're really trying to do the will of Hashem, we make the will of Hashem our most important priority, then he knows our needs. He knows the things we need. He knows the things that we'd like in our lives, right? The certain things that we would like to have in our lives. So then he gives us when we try to do his will, and we try to link ourselves, our will to his will, so then he does miracles for us, and he performs, and he does our will.
Do we have to pray for it? For the specific things?
It's just a reality. Mm. It's a reality that when a person links his will to Hashem's will, then Hashem does his will automatically. But it's actually a very high level where you nullify, so where you strive, with your strive your whole life to try and do the will of Hashem. To try and live your life as Hashem wants you to live. My life is about doing the will of Hashem. That's what my life is about. That's the highest level. And that was really what our patriarchs were doing. That was their highest level, that they only saw the will of Hashem. Whatever Hashem wants, it was their life. Hashem's will was their life. They ran their lives. But what does Hashem want me to do now? Right, it's a Tuesday afternoon. What does Hashem want me to do this afternoon? Person stops and thinks, what does Hashem want from me? Right? Maybe I'm too tired to learn now, but what does he want from me in my present situation? What does he really want me to do right now?
Sleep.
So therefore it could be, maybe the answer is he wants me to sleep, maybe he wants me to go and visit someone who's not well, maybe he wants me to do something else. But if a person is really thinking and striving all the time to ask the question, what is it that Hashem wants from me right now in this present situation, and he's trying to do the will of Hashem, then that's living your life at the highest level. To be striving, it's almost the ultimate way to live your life. But we're really trying at every moment to do the will of Hashem. So that really is what the others were about. That they nullified their own will for Hashem's will. And therefore they also merited miracles. Just like we said before, that if you go up to the level of doing the will of Hashem, so then no other forces exist except the will of Hashem. Nothing else is important except for me to do what Hashem wants. And therefore Hashem absolutely runs their lives. And they see open miracles in their lives like the forefathers did see. They all saw miracles in their lives. Abraham Avinu went to fight the four kings who had captured Lot. So it was an amazing thing. He was throwing straws at them, and straws became arrows. They became spears, and he conquered them completely. He and Eliezer alone were able to send all the enemy running, fleeing, just by throwing straws at them. So it was like it was something supernatural, because they're doing the will of Hashem, and therefore Hashem does their will completely. And therefore, Hashem placed His name on them. He set His name on them, that He put His name on them, and that's like we say in the davening. We speak of the God of Avram, Elokei Avram, Elokei Yitzchak, Elokei Yaakov. Now, the Hashem, as we know Hashem, is the Hashem of Avram. It's how Avraham understood Hashem to be, as how Yitzchak understood Hashem to be, how Yaakov understood Hashem to be. So that's called Elokei Avram, the Lord of Avram. We know Hashem as Avram knew Hashem. We see Hashem through Avram's eyes, so to speak, because he was so close to Hashem. He is our teacher. He's the one who shows us. He's the one who shows us how to have a relationship with Hashem. And therefore, we speak of Hashem as the Lord of Avram, the God of Avram. And also, it fits another teaching that we have, which is brought in the Midrash, that our Avos Hein Heina Merkova. We say about the forefathers that they themselves are the chariot. So, what it means? What's the chariot? We've spoken about this idea before. That a chariot is just accommodates the rider. Right? The driver gets into the car, so the car doesn't express an opinion. When you're driving your car and you say, I want to go south, so the car says, no, I feel like going north today. I'm not in the mood to go south. You know, south, it's too cold there. Let's go north. North is nice and sunny. You know, north is where the beach is, and north is where there's nice weather. So the car doesn't express an opinion. You get into the car, and wherever you turn it, the car goes. The car drives wherever the driver drives it. You drove your car into a wall, it would also go straight into the wall. It would eject. You drive a car at 100 miles an hour straight into a wall, the car won't be stopped. It might say, no, you're doing a stupid thing. The car doesn't express the will. So the same thing about the forefathers. We say the forefathers were the divine chariot because they lived their life solely to do the will of Hashem. That, so to speak, He's the driver, He's the passenger, and He dictates to them how to live their lives, and they are totally the chariot of Hashem. He tells them, turn left, they turn left. Turn right. Drive into a wall. Drive over a cliff. Right? There's almost no will of their own. That's how they nullified their will to Hashem, to Hashem's will. And that's how they got this great accolade of being called that they are the divine chariot. Now, there's a higher level than the forefathers. And he says as follows, however, the level of Moshe Rabbeinu was even higher than that of the forefathers. Like the Torah itself says. The Torah itself tells us that never was there a prophet like Moshe. Never was there a prophet like Moshe. Meaning even the forefathers, even Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, never reached the level of prophecy that Moshe reached. And the basic difference between Moshe and the forefathers is actually expressed in a verse. In the beginning of Parshas Va'era, when Hashem speaks to Moshe, He says, I am Hashem. And He says the name Yud-Kei-Vov-Kei, I'm Hashem, Yud-Kei-Vov-Kei, which is the highest name of all. And I appeared to Avram and to Yitzhak and Yaakov with the name Kel Shakai. Kel, one of the names of Hashem, Shakai, another one of the names of Hashem, is a lower name. Those are names which He's going to explain are similar to the name Elohim, the master of all forces. Like the master of this force, the master of that force, the force of kindness, the force of compassion, different types of forces in the world. So I revealed myself to the forefathers as these lower forces. But the ultimate name of Hashem, which is Yud Kei Vav Kei, right, He says to him as follows, I appear to Avram Yitzchak Yaakov with the name Kel Shakai, and my name, which is Havayim, the highest name, which is the highest name of all. I never let them know that name. They never knew that name. They saw me as the master of different forces. They understood that I'm the master of all forces even. But they never saw me as the ultimate oneness, the ultimate creator of all, that all comes from me, that there is nothing besides me. This concept that there's nothing besides Hashem is the highest concept of all. And this is a concept only you have seen, Moshe Rabbeinu, and the forefathers themselves hadn't seen. So there's still other levels, and we're going to discuss this maybe in the next class, exactly the difference the whole difference between Moshe Rabbeinu's level and the level of the forefathers. The level of the forefathers was incredibly, incredibly high, right? They are the forefathers of the Jewish people. And Alavai, we should get even somewhat close to that. But then there's an even higher level, and that's the name of Havai, that there is nothing else besides it. That's the name that includes everything, that's total oneness of Hashem, which is the entire creation.